Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. If you got our promotion, you know that we're going to have a special guest today, and we haven't had a guest for a while. I've been going solo for, I don't know how many, for the last past weeks, months, and our guest who's going is, when I say going, is Dr. Victoria Young. She publishes the blog, The Crucial Voice of the People. Vicky, to us who know her, is a friend who's been on the War Report many, 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 many times, and she was an admin on our Facebook War Report. So she's family in that regard. Yesterday, she contacted me via email saying that she was sick. And the most ironic part of her being sick was that she had lost her voice. Now, if you guys have heard shows in the past where Vicky was on, you know Vicky has a strong voice. She's fearless. And she says it the way it is, and she is one of the, in my view, one of the important voices in this war on public education from our side. And so for her to lose her voice, that has got to be super agony on her part, because she always has a lot to say, and believe me, we all learn benefit from her voice. So it was, wow, for us to find out that she couldn't make it today. And earlier today, she contacted me saying that despite everything that she had tried to do, she was unable to get her voice back. And she asked me to sort of like step in her stead. Vicky, you know me. You don't want me to step in your stead. My elevator doesn't go all the way to the top. I play cards with not a full deck. And you know my rowboat is missing a lot of oars. You sure you want me to step in your stead as opposed to me just staying in my stead where people know that, you know, all these things about me? So I'm going to try and, to some extent, be Vicky, to some extent, as if I'm having a conversation with Vicky. And by the way, as a radio host or as a person in a conversation, you know this is the best kind of conversation where you do all the talking and the other person can only nod or what have you. In this case, you can't even see the other person nodding in agreement or disagreement. Thank you, Vicky, for this opportunity. Now, here we go. If you got our promotion as our promo that we put out every week, you know that who Dr. Vicky Young is. She is a very incredible, passionate, longtime activist for public education. She, in my view, is one of the foremost experts on the education law starting back in the mid-1960s, ESDA, the Elementary Secondary School Act of 1965, what Johnson signed into law. But it was John F. Kennedy who proposed it back in 1961, or elements of it in 1961. She has stayed abreast of all the reincarnations of this act, No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, and the current version of Student Achieve, Every Student Achieve. And believe me, I can't step in her stead in this regard. No one that I know of who is not a lawyer, who was not a person who was part of the team that authored this, what have you, has the depth and breadth of knowledge and efforts of working with this over 4 decades or more. So, Vicki, I'm going to try and do my best, but no one can do what you do. Now, we were going to try and cover a couple of things here. Memorial Day was John F. Kennedy's birthday. He just happened to fall on his birthday this time. And Vicki put out a blog on her blog, a post on her blog, that basically was a celebration of his birthday, but also what he, John F. Kennedy, did in terms of laying the groundwork for federal government's involvement in public education. Yesterday, she put out another blog on totalitarianism. And she referenced back again to Kennedy, and as it relates to totalitarianism, as it relates to education, schools, and the purpose of schools under said type of regime. So we were going to cover those two because they are intimately related, interrelated. But she's not here, so we can't do that. Vicki, since no one can do what you can do, I decided just a moment ago that I would only deal with the first part of what you and I were going to talk about today, and that is the John F. Kennedy's sort of like dream vision for what the federal government should do, could do, in the arena of public education. And I'm going to leave the blog that you posted today to next week. In other words, I'm going to make this a two-part series, and hopefully you will be back and will be able to come on and do the job that only you can do, and I'll be your sidekick. So with that in mind, let me say to you, my audience, that you can go to the War Report, our Facebook page, and you'll see posted the two articles I just mentioned, one from last week and one from yesterday. If you haven't already been there and read those two articles, I suggest that you do. And if you're the multitasking person, you can probably read them now while I'm blabbering away, if not after the show. So here we go. And her credentials are, if you got our promotion, her credentials are posted on that, our page, our promotion page. So again, here we go. Vicki, my conversation with you, as I have talked to you over the years, and particularly as it relates to today's show, and when we were discussing how we would proceed with today's show, we talked quite a bit about what's the message that you want to get over to the audience, the last 30 seconds, the last minute of the show. And very succinctly, you stated that it would be, this is a wake-up call, a further wake-up call, but more importantly, a call to action. You saw this as an opportunity once again to say to what I have dubbed the IT community that we need to come together. We need to unite, not continue to be divided because of different or differing ideologies, personalities, and all the things that tend to prevent individuals and groups from coming together. And I certainly share your feelings there, that we have no chance if we fight this war as individuals, as we fight this war as small groups, that the only way that we really have a chance, if there's still opportunity for us to have a chance, is that we unite by the millions. That was your, I think, your message. And so with that in mind, let me take everyone to how we got to the end game of our conversation. This was JFK's birthday, and you felt it was time for a tribute, at least from you. And at that particular time, we here on the War Report, we were doing 4 shows in May, all aimed at showing our appreciation for teachers. And you thought it would be appropriate to do the piece that we're going to do today during that time. And I thought so as well. So here's where we're going to go. Your title of the piece was Education Lessons JFK Left Behind. And what struck me in our conversation was that you felt that, first, it was an appeal on behalf of public education at a time when education itself, one, was not a department. It did not become a department until the peanut farmer guy, Jimmy Carter. Before that, it was part of HUD, H-U-D, Housing Urban Development Department. And Kennedy had a vision, and his vision was that education, this was 1961, and you referenced this, he had twin goals for public education: a new standard of excellence in education. Now, he wasn't talking about the standards like we have today, the Common Core standards and things of that nature. His thing was, we needed a new standard of excellence in education. I think what he was referencing was that across the United States, especially back then and further, back even further, was the fact that some states like Massachusetts had an excellent education system and may have standards that many states sought to not only emulate, but envy. But then you had other states, and the whipping boy was usually like Mississippi, who had dismal standards, dismal education for people of that state. And year after year after year after year, it was usually the bottom, or so near the bottom as you could call it the bottom, for decades. And Kennedy wanted to say no to that and have a new standard of excellence. Secondly, his vision was the availability of such excellence to all who are able to pursue it. And that was his way of saying equal educational opportunity, an equal shot at a quality, excellent education for all Americans. Not just the rich, not just the super rich, not just the middle class, not just for white people. He was saying for all people. That was in 61. And this is one of the first lessons you sort of like put on your blog that I'm assuming that you wanted people to be aware of, because it does set the stage, the framework for what would follow later. You posted in that article that in 1963, his final speech was also an appeal where he, Kennedy, recognized what this nation needed. And there were four things that he said the nation needed. He said a citizenry that was aware and understood our principles and problems. Now, you've been with War Report from not quite the beginning, but long enough to know that we here on War Report, we say that the purpose of the War Report is to create an awareness and understanding, and then we add to that emotional engagement, and our fourth point, individual and or collective positive social action. So that Kennedy, in your estimation, he had his four principles, and one of them, or the first one, dealt with awareness and understanding, pretty much like the War Report. So, you know, War Report is like traveling in the same circles as Kennedy. We're bad. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't go there because, again, this is you speaking as well. Skill, the second principle was skill, manpower, and brain power to match the power of totalitarian discipline. Now, that was a mouthful. Think of the period, folks. 1961, Kennedy was talking, I think, about an external power like the Russians, like the Chinese, but particularly the Russian. Remember, this is 1961, 1963. In the 50s, remember, and I talked about this, the launch of Sputnik by the Russian, the first man/animal launch into space and was able to bring it back successfully, and the monkey was alive and doing well. That sent, and I can't say it because Vicky, we've had a talk about me and, you know, four-letter words, which, by the way, I'm going to reference at the end of the show. So anyway, folks, it scared people. And I'm thinking, and I wonder whether or not you are agreeing with me here, that when he was referencing this totalitarian discipline, he was referencing foreign entities as opposed to today. In the article that you posted yesterday, and hopefully we will talk about next week, where the threat is internal, not external, that many here in the U.S. say that we are now facing a totalitarian regime, or we have seen the coming and the establishment of a totalitarian regime. What I talked about under the monogram of the Machiavellian agenda, neoliberalism, I think that's what you are referring to here, and that, again, this was a plea, more or less, to get the public to be aware. The third one was scientific efforts which demonstrate the superiority of freedom. He was saying that freedom was a bedrock principle of democracy, and that scientists, the adopting science and its supposedly objectivity and its supposedly search for truth, that it was through science that we could achieve and maintain our own freedom, and that this would be superior. superior to a, I guess, a regime where, under totalitarian regimes, where you don't have science as the basis for your democracy and for your freedom. This is part of that skilled manpower and brain power that I mentioned earlier. And the fourth principle, an electorate with sufficiently broad horizons and sufficient maturity of judgment to guide us safely through whatever lies ahead. I take that to mean that what you were saying in your interpretation is the word vision when you say horizon. That he was saying that, like Jefferson, you all remember from his history book, that his notion of this democracy where it was the will of the citizen, but the citizen needed to be a citizenry where people were educated, people were knowledgeable, people who were, they were not necessarily his words back then, critical thinking, critical assessment, and who could arrive, who could look at a range of information, especially in Trump era, where we have fake news and alternative facts, and analyze and discern and find the truth and make decisions, voting based upon this type of wisdom and this type of maturity, and that it was only through having this ability that we would have a democracy that would sustain itself as a democracy. Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but to me, what we're talking about is Kennedy was laying the foundation of several things. At least the way I see it, he was saying that these four principles, you know what they all have in common? They have as bedrock education. It is imperative on us as a nation to provide a quality education to all of our citizens so that they can become efficient at being a democratic citizen. I'll say that again. They can become efficient at being a democratic citizen. They will have the knowledge, the skill, that's the brain power to, oh, I almost said another one of those four-letter words, Vicky, sorry about that, to look at what's being said, what's being done, and see through it for what it is and not be misguided. In other words, we wouldn't be ignorant. We wouldn't be ignorant to the point where people like Trump, well, you can go say it's Obama, Clinton, Bush too, and all the politicians who get up, lie their ass off, that's a three-letter word, and people buy it. Following these four principles, hopefully, people would see the truth. People will be able to look at a person's background and et cetera and say, this guy is blowing smoke. Because in the past, I know he didn't do X, Y, Z. And now he's saying he'll do A, B, C to get my vote. Because once he gets in office, he's got to go back to X, Y, Z and never do A, B, C. I think, folks, he, like other people, was saying that education, quality education is the bedrock of our democracy, our humanity. Now, that's a big statement, but that's what I'm thinking. Now, in that speech, that final appeal, he was also laying out the federal role in education. Remember, I know you never forget, that it's the state responsibility to provide constitutionally, both, I guess, federally, as well as most all state constitutions, that it is the role of the state to provide an education for its citizens, for its young. And in fact, it's mandatory that children go to school, compulsory education, and it's equally mandatory that there be education provided. And it should be a quality education, and it should be an equal education for all. And I think he was laying the foundation in 61 and later in 63 for the role, the federal role in education. Because remember, states' rights has been a rallying cry from the very beginning. The states would have its own set of rights, responsibilities, and that this thing called the new federal government should not intrude upon. And remember also, this was so emotionally and politically charged that some people said the Civil War was fought over the issue of states' rights. And some people say, especially in the history books, that the Revolutionary War, 1700s, that led to the colonies separating from England was basically over states' rights, in this case, the monicum of no taxation without representation, and on and on and on. So having to try and establish a clearly defined role for the federal government was, I think, part of the motivation for the 61 speech and the 63 speech, the 1961-1963 speech, was saying to those people who would oppose this very clearly, the federal role was not federal control. Now, we would get, after Kennedy's assassination, we would get the 1965 ESEA, Elementary Secondary School Act, signed into law by Lyndon Baines Johnson. Very much of a sort of like a little historical sidetrack here. Remember that Johnson, from Texas, he was a Dixiecrat. The Dixiecrats are the Southern Democrats. And remember that came about because of the Civil War. And after the Civil War, the South would never again supposedly vote Republican, because Lincoln was a Republican. And so the South became Democrats. It's like a flipping of political agendas, political philosophy. Now it's Republicans who have the same agenda that the Dixiecrats had. You know what I'm talking about. So that we have here this continental, I'm going to call it continental divide for right now. But the SEA itself was based upon what Kennedy had laid out as his vision of the role, federal role in education. And it was Johnson who never voted for, quote, a civil rights, equal rights measure, I think, his entire time in Congress. Ironically, would be the one who would push through the legislation and who would sign it into law. That's just a little side trip here in history. But back to where we were, again, Kennedy wanted to strengthen, not weaken, local control of education. He wanted to make sure, and I keep saying this, but this is critical, the federal control of education was prohibited, stated right there in the SEA. And so that what we have is now, in all of its variations, coming up to where we are today, we've had this battle, internal battle, of what is the role of the federal government and what is a state right and responsibility, which is to educate the people of the state. Now, almost all of us know that throughout the years, and particularly in, well, Jimmy Carter, well, let's go back to even Reagan. Reagan, the beginning of what I've talked about in terms of neoliberalism, and we know that what I call the Machiavellian agenda was the privatization of everything and everyone, humanity and planet, and that education was one of the major social institutions that the agenda wanted to take control of, not to try and make it so that everyone in America had a quality education. No, different purpose, different reason. But moving up from there to Carter establishing a Department of Education, U.S. Department of Education, and all the other presidents, we get up to Bush 1 and wanted to be called the education president. You get up to Clinton and Gold 2000. You get up to Bush 2. And here's where something hits the fan with No Child Left Behind and Obama race to the bottom, race to the top, so that we see a changing role for the federal government in education. And we see that in that changing role is what more of controlling. And you do that, of course, by the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rule. The federal government had buku bucks, and they made the rules. This is moving us away from what Kennedy had in mind, Kennedy's vision. And this is what I think Vicky wanted us to really understand, where we are today, how we got here, by saying that Kennedy, back in 1961, and possibly even earlier, but 1961, on his first address to Congress, he was pitching, let's develop quality education system throughout the United States of America, all the states, and that the federal government can help the states not seek to control the states, but help the states in this process. Now, I'm sure Vicky would have a lot more to say and said more eloquently than I did in terms of trying to give a somewhat brief historical sweep of the federal government's role in all of this. The one thing that I know Vicky had in mind was that she basically was trying to say that, I won't say basically because there's a lot of things that she maybe would be saying here. She was saying that that first act, that ESCA, I think she was trying to say it was pretty cool. Because I know in the past she said that we have to remember what the original ESCA was all about. You said it, Vicky, in terms of being on the show. I remember one of the last times that you were here, you and I talked to a representative from Fair Test and a representative from Opt Out New York, who were at the time supporting the new version of DSEA. I think this was almost about this time last year or so, if I remember correctly. And you and I were trying to tell people that you really don't get what it is you're trying to support, at least from our point of view, about the student achieved versus the original purpose and intent of the ESEA. And in her article last week, she laid out quite extensively what that original 1965 Act was. Let me, if you haven't read her article from last week or haven't had a chance to view it right now, she wrote out about what the concerns or the spectrum of concerns that Kennedy had in terms of disadvantagedness. He was looking at the world, or the United States, and addressing what he called, or well, I'm saying what he called, like I was there. No, I wasn't. I think another one of Vicky's comments that we made. But anyway, he was talking about the disadvantagedness. The bill itself was comprised of, like all bills, Title I, Title II, Title III, Title IV, and Title V. Title I was education of children of low-income families to provide financial assistance to support educationally deprived children. Okay. I think that was cool. Title II, school library resources, textbooks, other instructional material to provide access to educational material for all students in the state. So what are you talking about here? He's saying we've got segments of our population that is disadvantaged, and they're not getting access to a quality education. The federal government can help do something about that. And this is what I think, I'm speaking in terms of what possibly Kennedy was thinking, this is what I think one of the first things the federal government can do, is Title I. We refer to these things today, Title I money, Title II money, Title III money, Title IV, whatever. And then with the library resources, textbooks, and other instructional materials, you know, even today, we got schools where kids are using textbooks that are 5, 10 years, in some cases, dated even further back than that. We got situations where kids have to share textbooks. Yeah, share textbooks. I know when I was teaching, well, I'm referring to my short stint in public education, both as a substitute and 1 year that I was a classroom teacher, that didn't have textbooks for everyone. And we didn't have new textbooks. You go to the library, totally undersupplied. And he was saying that this is one thing that the federal government can do. Under Title I and Title II, we can help resource our schools. Title III, the Supplementary Educational Centers and Services, to provide service not currently offered, but deemed valid to educational improvement made available to entire communities. Back in the 60s, he was talking about what we now call the community schools. Providing, federal government providing money. It always comes down to money, folks, okay? Money is power. Power is money. But providing money to have the community schools / wraparound services. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, was it during the month of April, May, that I gave a speech at a conference at a middle school in Rochester, New York, and it was a community school. Got out of the car and was walking up the walk to the school. I saw a sign saying parking only for the health clinic, parking for dental services, parking for medical services. This is what we do with the wraparound or community schools, parking for other kinds of services in this area, services that schools don't normally provide. Their community services, services that are open to the community. I helped found and was a director at such facility decades ago. Wayne State University, you've heard me mention this, set up what is called Wayne State Community Extension, where we had a building. During the day when the kids were at school, the building was open to the adults in the community. We taught community organizing services, GED services. We taught finance. We provided all kinds of things for the adults during the day. When the kids got out of school, we then went to providing services for the kids. Basketball league, a karate class, tutorial services. I employed a lot of the young men from the neighborhood as long as they were in school. And in the process of employing them, I tried to instruct them on work ethics and the importance of being at your job on time, like being at school on time, come ready to work, come ready to be a student, how to dress, talk, mannerism, behave, attitude, all of those things. This is what Kennedy was envisioning back in the early 60s. I did this in the sort of like late 60s, and now we're doing it here, here being in the United States. Here we go some, I don't know what, 30, 40 years later, this concept is catching on across the country. And Title IV was Educational Research and Training Cooperative, research action to provide research, training, dissemination of information aimed at improving the quality of teaching. Wow, that was a lot. But what did I just say? Saying that when evidence-based, what we now call evidence-based teaching, curriculum, and that the way to get this was to help fund research initiatives from universities, colleges, and other entities to look at teaching, how we teach, how we have taught in the past, and to try and discern what the best teaching style, technique, what's the best curriculum, material, ideas, approaches, and that this was something that the federal government could do in terms of, again, providing resources. I mean, these are things that schools now live and die by. If they don't get their Title I, Title II, Title III, Title IV, Title V money, states are not providing them. In many cases, states never have. They lose their title money. They're up the creek. Title V, state departments of education aim to stimulate and assist strengthening leadership resources of state education agencies. Again, the role here is federal government was to assist, was to help out, basically by providing grant money. The Secretary of Education and everyone dealing with education who working for the feds were strictly prohibited from seeking to assert leadership, dominance, influence at any level in terms of how the states went about trying to see to it that everyone got a quality education. So here we have the five titles, and they all, in theory at least, represented Kennedy's vision and Johnson's efforts to see that his vision became law. Now, here's something. And again, if you read our promo, Vicki was going to talk about education law, sort of like the history of education law. And that's over the years and via the ESEA as the original law, and then all of its changes throughout the decades. Again, I don't know if I'm doing Vicki justice here, and I'm sort of like, I don't say brushing through it, but again, her message was that we've forgotten, if we ever knew or recognized, what the original set of values, beliefs that were what education law was built upon, starting with Kennedy. And this is what I know, this part I'm sure, that she has been, boy, crusading for forever in terms of people, let's don't forget what the original intent was. We are so far removed from the original intent of the federal government getting involved with public education. The federal government has basically taken over politically, economically, public education via the purse string and set standards and have basically weaponized the standards, weaponized the curriculum, set standards for teaching, teacher education now, and teacher performance, and set penalties for teachers who, quote, students don't achieve according to the standards, punish teachers, punish whole schools, basically punishing whole neighborhoods if they don't achieve. So, you know where I'm going here. No Child Left Behind. Open the door. Four avenues for privatizing public education via school closures, turnaround, takeovers. States then usually adopt enabling legislation. That's what it's called, enabling. Legislation that enable us to put into action what the federal law requires. So we've had this whole new change here. And Vicky's being very, very polite and quiet, and let me both speak for her and myself and her interpretation, my interpretation of her interpretation of what this show was going to be about today. We're coming close to the end here, and as I said previously, I'm just touching the surface here, and I'm hoping Vicky will be well enough to come back next week, and we then go into a part two, which will allow her also to speak for herself on some of part one, but also in part two, her post that came out yesterday was totalitarianism and what education, how education is impacted, and what role education would play in a totalitarian society. I can't wait to get to that because, again, it's my Machiavellian agenda, it's my neoliberalism, and she and I will be able to exchange what we think, given those two perspectives, totalitarianism versus neoliberalism. Can't wait for that. Since I'm coming close to being out of time, I want to say something here about Vicky. And Vicky, I'm hoping you're listening. You remember, I think it was maybe about 2 years ago, in a conversation we had, phone conversation you had, and it sort of like got into me and the use of the four-letter words, the F-bomb and other four-letter words, and you told me that I could get away with that because my age, basically saying that I'm old as dirt, and that you and maybe other people couldn't get away with it because you were younger than I am. So, yeah. And then you sort of like alluded to the fact that I was so old that I knew Moses. I don't know if it originated with you or some other people. And I told you I didn't know the guy. Yeah, I was passing by when he was chiseling away on some rocks, what have you. And I looked over what he was doing and I said, hey, dude, another M is needed in commandment. That doesn't constitute me knowing him, Vicky. It was just an incident in history. And then you alluded to something about me and some other guy. Oh, Noah, I think it was. I didn't know Noah either, Vicky. I was passing by again, and the boat was lifting to one side. And I yelled at him, yeah, yo, dude, you need to bring 2x2 and put some people on the other side, balancing it out. That did not constitute a conversation, Vicky. That did not constitute that I knew the guy. It was just, again, I was passing through history. And the last one, Vicky, was about me and my pets. It wasn't a dinosaur. It was a T-Rex. One of the cutest little things you ever see. I just wanted to correct you, Vicky, from those conversations or that particular conversation. All right, time is up. I've had fun. Again, Vicky's a friend, and I can do this with Vicky. And I hope you got something out of this, and hope next week, I said, Vicky will be able to come and clear up all the confusion I may have created, and then we go forward with the rest of the show. Thanks, everyone. Have a good Sunday. Go Cleveland. Beat Golden State today. Thank you. Bye.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.